Welcome to the New Books Network.
Confounding, exhilarating, and contagious. Emotions matter, and so does applying emotional intelligence. Welcome to Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight, the podcast where emotions rule. Whatever the topic, how do hearts and minds collide? Find out with your host, a college professor turned globe-trotting EQ entrepreneur. His mission? Each week, Dan joins prominent authors in decoding how emotions drive outcomes and make people tick. Now, on to the show.
Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining me for the 63rd episode of my podcast, Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight. The series appears here on the New Books Network, which has as its motto, sharing knowledge so people can thrive. Today's topic is how influencers are shifting marketing dollars. I'm joined by Gordon Glenister. He is the author of Influencer Marketing Strategy, How to Create Successful Influencer Marketing. The publisher is Kogan Page. Gordon is based in Cambridgeshire, UK. He's a global head of influencer marketing for the Branded Content Marketing Association. He's also the host of the Influence podcast, which goes out globally, and he was previously the director general of the British Promotional Merchandise Association for more than a decade. Welcome to the show, Gordon.
Welcome, Dan. Lovely to be here.
Great. So give us a brief overview of the book, if you don't mind. We'll start there.
So, it took me like 18 months to write. It's really quite interesting, actually, because I'd come from the sort of merch or swag industry before. And it was back in 2018 that I left the association and set up my own membership consultancy. And I met up with an old friend of mine who ran the Branded Content Marketing Association. And I said to him, you know, there's this growth in influencers that have been meteoric. But I was really concerned that nobody was sort of really representing them from an association point of view. Because there's been a bit of bad press sometimes and there wasn't really much regulation, a bit like the Wild West, really. And so what I felt was there was a real need to have some form of representation in the sector. So we created a new division of the Branded Content Marketing Association for influencers. And it wasn't long after that that I went to an exhibit marketing show, actually. And I happened to see Kogan Page exhibiting there. And I went over and spoke to them and I said, just out of interest, do you have a book on influencer marketing? And surprise, surprise, they didn't. So I thought, this is interesting. So in a nutshell, I decided to pitch the idea to the publishers, not thinking for a moment that they'd accept my proposal for a book on influencer marketing strategy, given the position that I was in and the potential opportunities for me to engage with the industry, you know, on a global scale. I was connecting with brands, I was connecting with influencers, I was connecting with other people. So I thought, actually, it would be quite a good book to write, not just from my own perspective, but reaching out to a number of other people. So what I've been able to do, Dan, is to interview a number of these people and their journey as well. And obviously also create a glossary of terms, because there's lots of terms around the influencer space which some people may be unfamiliar with. Lists of influencer marketing platforms, because, you know, sourcing influencers is still one of the biggest challenges. So there are now lots of platforms and sourcing tools that enable you to do that. And obviously just showing people what influencer marketing strategy is all about and how to do it properly. Because I think there is still a massive education about what it takes to not only be influential, but actually reach influencers and connect with them as business owners. So that's the premise of how the book really came about. And it was we published in America at the end of March 21, so not a lot long ago.
Sure. No, well, first of all, I have to say it's fortuitous how you got to Kogan Page. In my case, since I've published two books with them, I was going to be meeting with an ad agency in London, and the guy had been fogged in trying to come down from Manchester. And lo and behold, the person sitting next to me in the lobby was from Kogan Page and was looking at my book and saying, is this represented in the UK? And no, and lo and behold, we ended up making a deal. So let's talk about trust, because it seems to me that a lot of this book is ultimately about whether or not the brands have a lot of trustworthiness to them and trying to find that, because after all, trust is often called the emotion of business. Mm. Can you talk to me about the trust dynamic as it applies to influencers?
Well, obviously, we're dealing with human beings here, and there's a variety of,
indeed,
a variety of people in all different guises. There was some research recently done that suggested, particularly amongst millennials and Gen Z, that they just don't trust traditional advertising and brands in the way that they just don't like being sold to, in a way. And they find better connections with influencers, with content creators, with friends and families. And now that's why you're starting to see all sorts of organizations realize the value in working with influencers and working with online communities, brand communities, of which often are spearheaded by influencers. That said, of course, not all influencers are trustworthy, and it is very, very important that as a brand or organization, that you do your due diligence. And, you know, because a little while ago, influencers were largely used as sort of brand amplifiers to build brand awareness. But now they've been, you know, such as the way the industry has grown and the technology that has supported it, now they are really driving sales and performance-related marketing, which is very, very exciting. Particularly when you see what's happening in China, with sort of live streaming. But just as I was talking about trust, what you want to do is you want to make sure that people haven't bought followers. You want to make sure that there is real authenticity in the individual and in the content that they're creating, because that, ironically, is one of the greatest strengths in working with influencers, is they are authentic. You know, they are relatable. They often have niche audiences, which for a brand is absolutely liquid gold. So in the same way that you might want to hire somebody to work with you, you're not just going to go out to the street and say, do you want to work for me? You're going to look at some resumes, aren't you? You're going to do your checking. Well, that's what you should be doing. Sometimes people don't do that. They just reach out to on Instagram or Facebook or LinkedIn and think, actually, these guys have got a big audience. I'm sure they'd be apt to supporting and promoting my product. Well, surprise, surprise, a lot of them won't. 65% of influencers ignore outreach emails from organizations, and they can't understand why they haven't had a response. Well, there's a method.
Well, I mean, that's crazy, because obviously they have their own brands. I mean, they are media companies in some cases themselves.
They are indeed.
If you're going to form a merger and acquisition, you would certainly do your due diligence on what was the brand you hoped to align yourself with.
Absolutely, for sure. Yeah.
So these it's in your book, and I thought it was very useful, because I'm also trying to get oriented to this space, just like you were at one point before you began the book, or as you were beginning the book. You mentioned that about average age is somewhere in the range of 28, and about 77% of them are female. So you mentioned relatable. Those are interesting statistics. Why is it go those two directions in terms of age and gender?
Well, I think and I'm absolutely fascinated by what I would call largely social media influencers as opposed to B2B influencers. There is a real difference between the two. So particularly sectors like fashion, beauty, lifestyle, food, drink, entertainment, sport has been dominated by women. And some of the results of influencer marketing has been unbelievable. I mean, I know some of these influencer platforms. Reward Style is one in particular. 90% of their influencers are all women on their platform, and some of them are earning, I mean, unbelievable amounts of money, and they're earning it not through just brand posts. They're earning it through affiliate marketing links. And why that's important is because that's very, you know, ROI driven. In other words, if they're earning $50,000 to $60,000 and more per month, think what they're generating for that brand. It's going to be considerably higher than that. When in often affiliate commissions could be around sort of 5% or 10%. So you can imagine what they're generating for the brand. It's been quite phenomenal. Lots and lots of female entrepreneurs have been created out of that. And obviously organizations are realizing they're not just now amplifying other people's brands, they're co-creating their own brand extensions. And this is particularly true, I mentioned briefly, around China. So some of the big organizations, the big manufacturers of clothing are realizing now, and designers as well, are realizing that these influencers have got ready-made audiences. We've got the factory, we've got the design skills, we've got all of the rest of it. Let's just co-create a fashion line for said influencer. And there's been lots of examples of this with beauty lines and swimwear co-collaborations. And you may have heard of this before, where they sell out in like hours. It is incredible because they have such a relatable audience. That said, of course, they've got to make sure that the partnerships that they work with are meet their match as well, because unfortunately social media works both ways.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, if people are unhappy about a service, they're going to let you know about it, and they're going to let you know it in front of your follower base. So the influencer knows that getting that content, that community, and the relationship with their followers right is uppermost to them.
Yeah, no, their brand equity is invested as well.
Exactly.
And can corrode right in front of their very eyes and ears if it gets subverted in some fashion. Just a wild question, but as you were talking about China and tying the factory to almost the influencer voice, has any company gone as far as to put an influencer on their board of directors yet?
Hmm. Good question. I've no idea, to be honest, but
like they could and should almost. These are really their is their opportunity to connect to the market.
So here's the thing, Dan. I think a lot of the people that are in this space, particularly those younger, Gen Z and millennials, have been brought up as being digital natives. So you're not just investing in somebody that can grow an audience. They have an absolute understanding of the numbers, of the analytics. They know what type of content works. They know when and what time to post. So they are consistent in what they do. That's why they'll often say, I post my videos up on a Thursday morning. Look out for it. So they're building awareness. They're building excitement. They're almost filmmakers, they're producers, they're
sure.
Location scouts, they're website designers, they're email drivers, they're on it.
Well, I find it fascinating for a couple of directions, still staying with gender for just a moment. One is, I know in the U.S., because I just had a guest on talking about pitches and entrepreneurs and venture capitalists. Unfortunately, in America, to this day, even though women own 38% of the businesses, 2% of the venture capital money goes to female startup founders, just 2%.
Wow. Yeah.
And at the same time, women are, generally speaking, the primary buyers. Marty Barletta, Tom Peters have both written about, female buyers really dominated most fields. So it seems to me, going back to your term relatable, that this all kind of sinks together to me. These are people finding their way forward. They're not waiting for the VC money. They can be relatable. They're consumers themselves. Do they in their, because you would know this world better than I certainly do, are they in the way in which they build their brands and being relatable, are they really encoding it with their experiences and point of view as females and in a world that's frankly still often quite sexist?
Yeah. So the other good thing is that as they grow bigger, what they often are doing is not just talking about, they're becoming opinion formers in their own right. So they'll have positions on certain things. That's why they won't accept collaborations with brands that are going against their brand values. So that's why we use the word collaboration a lot, because that's what a brand should always see an influencer as a collaborator, not as an employee, not as a service provider, but as an absolute collaborator. How can we both benefit? You get brand awareness, engagement for what you're doing. I get is great content. I get opportunities for my followers to maybe get a discount or to see different types of products. It's also worth mentioning when you are trying to work with an influencer is what you are trying to do. What influencers don't like to be is told what to do. They are natural content creators. So bring them into the discussions or opportunities much earlier on. When you reach out to them, we recognize them. I call it the tickling the toes. Before you ever reach out to an influencer, please comment or like what they are doing. Because they are, if they start to see you and know that, you've reached out to them based upon what they're already doing, then this is the first part of building a really great relationship. And the best influencer partnerships are based on relationships and longer term partnerships as well, rather than just one stop campaigns. The influence of followers start to see that brand doing things with them on a much more regular basis. The other thing is that influencers want access to things that perhaps other people don't get. And that might be a behind the scenes look at your business or factory or VIP access to an event, not because they want it just for themselves. It's because actually what they want to do is bring their audience with them, so that it's almost like using the welcoming hand on video. So look, come on, this is where we're going. And if you're a brand, think how amazing that is. You're opening up to this huge audience.
And you're providing novelty and authenticity by getting that. Yeah.
Indeed. And that's why stuff like makeup tutorials have been so important. It's not just about, here's the latest makeup from a particular makeup brand. No, this is, I'm so excited to have this. This is super cool. And this is how you can use it to make a difference to your life. And so therefore you've got education and promotion and inspiration and entertainment all rolled up into one. And that is the magic formula for creating great content.
Okay. Well, before we leave the startup space, I have to bring up this question. Since you wrote a book on influencer marketing and then you're launching a book yourself, you set the standard high. So how did you tackle and make use of this whole paradigm?
Of influence, you mean related to the book, you mean? Yes.
And launching your book with such content and obviously wanting to be a successful influencer yourself.
Yeah. So this is really interesting because I had best laid plans to have a book launch in a private members club, really nice, bring loads of friends, maybe some family and, people that have supported me. With people I've interviewed and that sort of stuff, and have a glass of champagne and just celebrate it as many authors would like to do. However, of course, in March this year, we were still in lockdown, or there were limited amounts of events going on, hardly any, to be honest. So because of the way that the publishers had worked on their production schedule, I didn't have much choice. So we ran an online book launch, which was absolutely fascinating because it allowed for people all around the world to join. And because it was at 7 o'clock in the evening UK time, we had a number of American visitors as well. Lots of fun, lots of engagement in the chat. I gave away some books for a quick fire quiz. I always ask a question, who's the most influential person been in your life and why? And that always creates a lot of engagement. But mirrored to that, Dan, we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, is the LinkedIn post that I did. So bearing in mind, this was my launch LinkedIn post. It had to work. If this didn't work, I'm like dead in the water. So I just created a really nice picture of me with my books and a table at home. And I used it to say, thank you very much. This has been a really fascinating journey. There's been some ups and downs, as there often is for novelists and authors. And all the people that have helped contribute to me during the book. And anyway, I reached out to about six or seven people before on WhatsApp, and I said, look, guys, it's a big post, this. can you comment? I know the way the LinkedIn algorithm works. Can you comment fairly quickly? and sure enough, they did. And the results speak for themselves. So I got over 16,000 views, 133 comments, and 15 reshares. So that was quite a fascinating journey. And it's gone on from there. But, I mean, the moral of this is that if you want to be influential, then you've got to be consistent in what you say, how you say it, day in, day out. That is, and also be a storyteller. Don't be constantly trying to promote and use what I would call, old-fashioned sales. It's about trying to build relationships with people, educate them, inspire them, and entertain them. You know, if you can be a bit funny as well, that works. Look at TikTok, for example.
Sure. Well, it strikes me that's part of this movement here. It used to be in advertising, you talked about persuasion, which I always thought was fairly insane that in 30 seconds, in a TV spot, you're supposed to, change one's worldview. Influence is a little bit softer, but it also strikes me that it's less about reason and more about emotion.
Totally.
When I think about influence, I think about friends. When I think about persuasion, I'm thinking, I'm going to make a logical argument that A equals B, and you should be buying C. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, honestly, I have been so amazed by some of these younger people. I'm super impressed with not just what they say, but even the type of video content, the transitions, the music. I mean, they're little mini filmmakers, some of them. I mean, you must have seen it as well, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean,
absolutely.
It's what it's doing is it's bringing brands to life in a way that sometimes even they have not seen. And this is another reason why influencers can be so successful, because they can work to a brief and they can interpret it in a way that the brand has never even thought possible.
Yeah, no, I think it's all, in this day and age, we're so saturated. I think it's a lot about the imagery, and it's about the voice or perspective, the values that you're bringing. So when I worked in the industry as a market researcher, I was amazed by how few market researchers were what I would call visually literate and emotionally literate. Mm. And I just thought they were way out of date as to where the society is moving and what's going to connect with people and what kind of skill set you needed. So you mentioned the word algorithm just a bit ago. I want to come back to that because, the tyranny of the algorithms is very much with us these days.
Yeah.
So let's take us through briefly before we run out of time here. I just wanted to, and you can take this as you'd like, but obviously you have lots of different platforms from Instagram to Twitter and LinkedIn and so forth, Facebook. You want to just go a little bit into each of those and how the angles might change in terms of how influencer marketing works best and the pitfalls?
Well, I mean, obviously it depends on your type of product or service, doesn't it? I mean, if you had a financial product, perhaps Instagram and YouTube are less relevant to you than if you had LinkedIn and Twitter. So that's why I was alluding to sort of B2B influencers who, by the way, would not necessarily refer to them as such. They may well be seen as an expert, a speaker, an author, but funny enough, they all possess influence if they are going to change the behavior in some shape or form of their audience. So a lot of, just on the B2B side, by the way, on LinkedIn and Twitter, a lot of that is about articles, co-creation content, working with speakers as well is not just about promoting speaker sessions, but it's about what your take on a subject. I always say if you're on LinkedIn, don't just promote articles all of the time, and be seen to be commenting on other people's content that are in your target niche, because that's when you are you're showing up. People are seeing, that's an interesting perspective that Gordon has there. And they'll then want to discover and find out more about you. So Twitter tends to be used a lot, of course, by journalists. So, and it's very much instant conversation. One of the things that I got involved with last year was a group called Forgotten Limited, who were a lobbying group trying to support small to medium-sized businesses that have been left out by funding. So I got involved in a Twitter bomb. I don't know if you've ever heard of that before, have you? But basically, the organizers just pretty much said, right, we're going to try and lobby government and we're going to try and trend. So they got the whole of this group to literally at 8 o'clock one evening get involved in comments. And of course, we liked and we shared everybody else's. And sure enough, within a very short period of time, we were trending on Twitter. So it just proves how much you can move the needle, but if you do it in a coordinated way. With Instagram, obviously, you know, there are it's great for fashion, lifestyle, brands like that. Food as well works really, anything that's sort of visually stimulating. I mean, obviously, what the algorithms are looking for is relevance, consistency of content, and making sure that people are liking your content very, very quickly, because that will sort of push it out to a wider audience. I love reels as well, what people are doing. I mean, I'm sort of less, I don't know about you, Dan, but I'm a less fan of video. There is a bit of video on my Instagram, but I don't do much of it, if I'm honest. I'm just so overwhelmed by some of the other people that are doing it, if I'm honest.
There's a lot of talented people out there. Yes.
There's a lot of talented people. And sometimes I know what people feel like, oh, I don't feel good enough to do it, you know, and what I would say though is bite-sized chunks. So I've just done something recently at the lakes near where I live, which is three bite-sized tips from the lake. So it's about helping and educating your audience, but doing it in a fun and engaging way. So the idea is that you stand out because I'm at the lake and I constantly go, it's a beautiful setting that Gordon has. That's the sort of idea behind that. What else? YouTube, of course, long form content works really well with YouTube. So this is much more about series. Stuff like, look at how we've loved Netflix series as opposed to films. You know, we sort of deep dive into content, don't we? And we keep going back to it time and time again. And this is one of my influencer friends who's a 24-year-old actually. She does a lot of comedy on TikTok. She generated 24 million views just by doing a series. So she did a lot of the video, but she broke it down into bite-sized chunks. And what that meant is that people were, oh, this was really good. And then she'd say at the end of it, and if you want to see more, don't forget to tune into the next episode. So she's really locking them in on this sort of journey. But there's lots of other great examples of how the platforms are really helping people. And of course, TikTok, we mentioned briefly there. I don't know if you're on TikTok. I'm not really, but its biggest audience is under 40. It's broadening out now. Of course, it was very much sort of entertainment driven, but now you're getting some B2B there. I mean, I saw once an American lawyer out there that had really done so well because he realized that none of my competitors are here.
are in that space, yeah.
I'm going to be the go-to lawyer and I'm going to bring entertainment to helping people, you know, get a mortgage or get a loan. And I thought, smart, you know, it's all about finding your voice, finding your niche and doing it really, really well.
Yeah, no, definitely agree. One last question here before we wrap up. I'm curious about companies managing to, I guess, collaborate with their own employees as influencers. Are there companies that have done this particularly well or really faltered in their attempts?
Well, this is a massive growth area, to be honest. I've actually just written a report, actually, with influencer marketing platform Analytica, which is the social CEO. And we've looked at the LinkedIn Twitter accounts of over 300 CEOs of membership bodies and trade associations who have traditionally, of course, some of them in the past would have, you know, managed that with their marketing or social media team. And what we've been saying, never before has it been important for CEOs and indeed their employees to be great advocates. So we're going to see as a trend, I think, an explosion in thought leaders within organizations for sure. But that has to come from the top, you know, and I think the more that we get CEOs breaking away from the corporate stance and let us see them with their shirt sleeves down and, you know, and I must admit, that's what's been great about Zoom, isn't it? We've started to see people in their natural home environments rather than their ivory corporate towers. And how difference do we feel then? We feel totally relatable that the cat suddenly comes into the Zoom call. And that's all part of breaking down some of these stereotypical barriers. So I think employees that are naturally talented, technical experts are absolutely set to be influencers.
Well, I also think it's going to be interesting because it makes the employees, you know, there's a lot of complaints that we're in a mode of replacement workers and we just churn through them. Well, you're not going to want to churn through people who are, you know, bringing you market share and, you know, have become, in effect, the voice of your company.
Absolutely.
Through their successes as an influencer. Anyway, this has been all fascinating stuff, but time is pretty much up. Gordon, I want to thank you so much for being my guest. This has been episode number 63 of Dan Hill's EQ Spotlight. My guest, Gordon Glinister, he is the author of Influencer Marketing Strategy, How to Create Successful Influencer Marketing. If you've enjoyed today's show, please give it a rating or review on iTunes. You can check out other episodes by going to my company's website at the obligatory 3Ws, sensorylogic.com. You can also go to the New Books Network and type in the show's name and find other episodes in that way. Finally, I like to conclude every episode with typically an epigram, but I'm going to go with two epigrams in this case, one serious and one more lighthearted, both having to do with influencing. The first, more businessy one, comes from Ken Blanchard, who said, "The key to successful leadership today is influence, not authority," speaking of CEOs and from the top down. The second one, much more lighthearted, comes from Mark Twain, who says, "Clothes make the man. Naked people have little or no influence in society." Until next time, be kind and stay safe.